Welcome to the study series on the book Education. This series was presented by Pastor J.W. Bill Lehman at the Campus Hill Church, Loma Linda, California.
I want to thank you for coming out this evening, and I hope you brought your book Education. If you'd like to listen, that's fine, but I think you'll find it very interesting to read along. Many believe that the primary difference between Christian education and that of the public school systems, that we do not teach evolution, that we have higher standards of behavior, that we emphasize missions. And they stop there. In fact, that's what most Adventists think. Just a few differences and nothing else. Unfortunately, we have educators who believe this simplistic difference, and that's all. And this is a very difficult thing because often we talk about this, people take it as criticism. I don't think it's criticism. I think it's an opportunity. When you're offered something 1,000 times better than you have, are you glad to have it? Or do you feel criticized? If someone offers you a new car and all you have is an old junker to drive, are you criticized because you drive an old junker? Or would you like to have the new one? So I hope you see this a little differently than many people are prone to see it. Now, we're not just talking about criticism. Why are we satisfied with something so little and so meager when we have something so much better? Why are we satisfied? God offers us so very, very much. Now, too often this subject is discussed as criticism, as somebody trying to find fault with what we have. I hope that we do not dwell in that gutter tonight, that we get out of the ditch and begin to see things vastly different as God has offered them to us. In my way of thinking, this is probably the deepest book that Ellen White has written. Most people read it. The words are simple. They're not complicated. The thoughts don't seem complicated, but I believe that most of us read it and get about 10% out of the book and miss at least 90%, if not more. I honestly believe this. I believe you can read through it, say those nice thoughts, I believe it, put it away and never think about it again as long as you live. It's easy to do that. But this is a vastly different book in my estimation. She begins with a scripture reading that was read tonight, only she quotes from Revised Version in the marginal reading, which is similar to the King James marginal reading, 2 Corinthians 3:18. We all with unveiled face is found there in the Revised reading, reflecting as a mirror the glory of the Lord, are transformed into the same image from glory to glory. Now here she's describing Christian education in its simplicity from the Bible. We read it, and I suppose we don't see much there about Christian education. But she sees this transformation as the true basis of Christian education, what it's all about. And the very first page, she discusses what is true education. And the definition is perhaps the most important thing in the whole book, because unless we understand what she means by this, we'll always be assuming we understand when we don't. So please remember what she says here in the first paragraph, page 13 of the book. Our ideas of education take too narrow and too low a range. Too narrow, too low. Wider and higher must be, you see. There is a need of a broader scope, a higher aim. There's a need for that. True education means more than the pursual of a certain course of study. It's more than getting your degree in some field. Far more than that. It means more than a preparation for the life that now is. That is to become a good citizen, make a good living, and die having made a good living. It's more than that, the life that now is. It has to do with the whole being, or the whole person, if you like to call it that. True education has to do with the whole person, the whole being, and with the whole period of existence possible to man. So it's more than this present physical lifespan. So it deals with more than the mind, deals with the whole person, deals with the whole existence open to us, which is here and hereafter, if you know what I mean by that. Then she enlarges upon that. It is the harmonious development of the physical, the mental, and the spiritual powers. That's the whole being. It deals with the whole being, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual powers. True education deals with all those areas, not just one of them. It prepares the student for the joy of service in this world, and for the higher joy, wider service in the world to come. There's the whole existence, here and hereafter, you see. So a broader and a higher scope she's talking about. Not just here, not just being a good citizen now. Not just the mind. But the mind, the body, and the soul. Here and hereafter. The whole existence of man, the whole person of man. Supposedly, this is our goal also in medical ministry, to treat the whole person. Not just the body, but the body, mind, and the spirit, or the soul. That's what we said, is it not? In fact, that's the motto for this university. To treat the whole person, the whole being. We're not to try to isolate any one portion and leave out the rest. That's not the purpose of our treatment. Otherwise, we miss so much if we do that. Now, this is the what of true education. The what. If you forget this, the rest of the book will be rather meaningless. You have to just keep this in mind all the time as a building block on which the rest of the book is built. It's the foundational. So it deals with the whole being. Now, if you're going to deal with the whole being, and true education involves the whole man, you must give equal time to the three parts of man. If you spend too much time in the mind, you'll neglect the body and the soul, and you'll become a mental giant and a physical and spiritual weakling. And that's happening to many. If you're a physical fitness addict, you'll have a strong back and a weak mind and a weak soul. If you're a nut after the spiritual, you'll become a fanatic in that area and have a weak mind and a weak back. You cannot emphasize one to the exclusion of other. We must have a balance, the harmonious development, equal time for all three. Unfortunately, we allow society to dictate to us which we emphasize the most. And we're unprincipled people. Our only principle is to follow what the educational system of the world says. We don't have backbone enough to believe we have the best. We think the world's in advance of us. So we leave out some of the others. And even in Christian education, we're guilty of leaving out the spiritual and proper understanding of the physical. This is very difficult to get physical into Adventist schools. Very difficult. And to get spiritual back in a balance. As balanced as the Lord has told us to have it. The next part is about the source of such a higher education or such true education. What is its source? She quotes two texts, Colossians 2, verse 3, and then verse 2, just to tell you what it's talking about there. Colossians 2, verse 3. And verse 2 tells you the person it's speaking of. In whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And verse before it talks about the mystery of the God of the Father and of Christ. In him or in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. All the treasures, all the riches of wisdom and knowledge. If you lack wisdom, ask whom? Ask God. Is that only true in spiritual? Is that only true in the spiritual? Is it? Good. Still alive. I wondered. Thought maybe I was blind to seeing statues out there. Of course not. Who made the nature which we study in science? Who made the natural laws? He did. From where did the speech come from, you know? The ability to speak. He did. Where did the minds come? The ability to think. He did. Who made our bodies? He did. Any area of study, he created. The laws of mathematics, the laws of music. Whatever area you go into. Astronomy. Even philosophy. True philosophy, if you want to call it that, if there's such a thing. All these things are, he was before all these things, and he's the source of all of them. Another quotation, a text that's used is, found in the book of Job, chapter 12, verse 13, giving one from the Old and one from the New Testament, which she likes to do very well, and gives a balance. Job 12 and the 13th verse. With him is wisdom and strength. He hath counsel and understanding. With him. So if you lack, ask him for it. He will give it to you. And so she points out, first of all, the what is true education, and then the source of this, we might understand it. And she goes on and dwells a great deal on this idea about the source. On the top of page 14, the second quotation I'd like to quote, as the moon and the stars of our solar system shine by the reflected light of the sun, so far as their teaching is true, do the world's great teacher thinkers reflect the rays of the sun of righteousness. Now remember, there's a qualification. So far as their teaching is true, they reflect the thinking of the sun of righteousness, you see, the rays of light from him. Every gleam of thought, every flash of the intellect, is from the light of the world, the light. And Christ said, I am the light of the world. So it's all from him. Now that doesn't mean that all the intelligent things you hear in school are from him. doesn't mean that at all. There's a tremendous amount of deception in our educational systems, all educational systems today. They're not from him at all. In fact, they come from the Father of Darkness and not from the Father of Light. So be very careful about how inclusive you make that. But true knowledge, true wisdom is all from him. He is the only source of knowledge and understanding and wisdom. And so we must understand that. She says that this is higher education in its truest sense. In other words, to achieve wisdom and knowledge from him is really higher education. Page 14, the first paragraph on that page. In these days, much is said concerning the nature of and importance of higher education. The true higher education is that imparted by him with whom is wisdom and strength, quoting here from Job 22:21, out of whose mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. One is Proverbs 2:6, the first one, then was Job 22:21. So the true higher education is that imparted by him who has wisdom and strength and counsel and understanding. Everything else that we call higher education is lower. Much, much, much lower. I'm amazed at how worldly higher education can be degrading. It narrows. It restricts. It confines. It makes us warped often in our thinking. We think we've learned much, but we find ourselves drawing apart from other people. We find ourselves unable to help them. We find ourselves sometimes alienated from our own spouses and families by our so-called higher education in the world today. Many detrimental things happen to us that seem to harm us in what the world calls higher education. Many become a recluse, just locked up in a laboratory someplace. And that's all they want to do. People no longer important. Things and books and labs are important, but not people. Many years ago, a man working on his doctorate in science, physics, a good friend of mine and his wife as well, and he had some pressure on him to receive his degree. And so at 4 o'clock in the morning, he's in the lab, and all day long, and midnight, he's still in the lab. He had a wife and two children. One day, his wife stopped me and said, "Bill, would you please say something to my husband? He's never home." He knew he was never home. He was apologetic about it, but he thought he was trapped. He had to get it finished. It drove him and drove him and drove him. There have been many divorces caused by so-called higher education. It happens here too frequently for my liking and disposition. It's still happening tonight, tomorrow morning, the next day, on and on and on. I wonder if there isn't something wrong with our value systems and our understanding of true education, higher education. Would you sell your family for a degree? Christ Object lets them talk about those who destroy their bodies and their minds to obtain higher education. She used the text, sell your soul. And she says, when you could use it, your body is so destroyed in your mind by the taxation put upon it that you can't use it anymore. The body's become enfeebled in the mind, and now you can't use that which you've learned to bless mankind. We must be very, very careful about this. God does not give a higher education that deprives us of our families and helping others and becoming whole persons that are blessing to all those round about us and not just to ourselves. There's a tremendous thing, higher education, that imparted by him with whom is both wisdom and strength. So he's the only one from whom he can receive it. Too often in higher education, he has almost no place. We think we can put God in elementary school and we have prayer and devotions and so on. But by the time you get to university level, we don't even have prayer anymore. We know better, don't we? Don't we? We can leave him out. So we don't have to do it. We can have our own. We don't have to have it in school. We become so adult, we don't need to have these crutches or whatever you want to call them. Now, only this education, this true education, comes from him. All other sources are inferior and lower. And all knowledge and higher education centers around God. There is no other source. Any great thinker must receive his knowledge from him and his light from him, as the planets do from the sun. Again, on page 14, the middle of page. In a knowledge of God, all true knowledge and real development have their source. I'm talking about two knowledges now. in the knowledge of God, all true knowledge and real development have their source. So it's impossible to find true knowledge in science, we'll say, without going to the source, whom is a knowledge of God, you see, which is knowledge of Him. I must receive it from Him, or I'll not get a true knowledge in science. I must go right back to Him. This is a most interesting paragraph. Now it leads us into the how as well as the source. Wherever we turn in the physical and the mental and our spiritual realm, in whatever we behold apart from the blight of sin, this knowledge is revealed. In the physical, the mental, and the spiritual realm, wherever we turn, a knowledge of God is revealed. Do you see it? No, we don't, do we? We look at all the things in the physical, mental, and spiritual realm. We don't see Him. We see theories, we see things, we see living things, we see moving things, we see mysterious things, we see miraculous things. But somehow we stop right with things, don't we? Almost like a pantheist, we stop with things and don't see the person behind the things. And we get very intrigued by the laws of things in nature. But who made the laws of those things? We don't even think about that. Our minds seem to run into some kind of a roadblock, and there we stop. And most education just stops with the laws of physics and nature and so forth, you see, and never see the creator of the laws and the creator of the things. And we're very prone to leave out the creator, the knowledge of God, in studying the created and the laws of the created. That's what the pantheists did, you see. They made the creator, the creature, greater than the created, the creator rather. The creature more than the creator. The creator must be the one we study, you see, as we look at the created things and the creatures. Then we have true education. Wherever we turn in the physical, the mental, or the spiritual realm, in whatever we behold apart from the blight of sin, this knowledge is revealed, this knowledge of God. Whatever line of investigation we pursue with a sincere purpose to arrive at truth, we are brought in touch with the unseen, mighty intelligence that is working in and through all. You're brought into what now? In touch. There's some kind of contact made with that unseen, mighty intelligence that is working in all and through all. Now, we suffer from a blindness. He's promised to meet with us in the church where two or three gather together, a few more than that here tonight. So we come to church. We don't see Him. We don't hear Him. We don't sense Him. We don't perceive Him. We go home. He wasn't there. We do the same thing in education. We study the things He has made and that He operates through and functions and controls, and we still don't see Him. And we're sometimes awed by the majestic mountains or the grandeur of the heavens, and we sense a power, a miracle of some kind. But do we really perceive Him? Do we make a contact with the unseen, mighty intelligence? She seems to say that in education you must make the contact. That somehow we're capable of doing that. And that teachers, godly teachers, ought to bring about that contact. It isn't the what, it's the contact. It's not enough to study the what. You must study the whom. Who made all these things, you see? Who is behind all this? Who controls all this? Whose is it? Get behind all of it. Study the person. The knowledge of God in Him is all true knowledge and real development. It's in the person. To know Him is life eternal, John 17:3. To leave Him out is to leave out eternity, to miss so much in life. I must continue that same paragraph. The mind of man is brought into communion with the mind of God, the finite with the infinite. The effect of such communion on body and mind and soul is beyond estimate. Now, this is the whole heart of chapter 1 and probably the heart of the book. As I study the physical, the mental, and the spiritual, the opportunity is provided for me to come into contact with the infinite God. He is there in the finite things. He's right there. I need not miss Him. I can perceive Him. I can reach out and touch, as the songwriter says. He is there. It's not entirely an act of faith, but much faith is involved, like seeing him coming here to church and hearing him. But in nature, we see things and perceive things that we know that man did not make and cannot make and cannot control and cannot guide. Why do the leaves turn in the fall with the frost? It's chemistry. Yes. But who created the chemistry? You know? Who planned this all out, that before a bleak winter, there ought to be a big splash of colors? I just came back from New England, and the colors are splashed all over. Who dreamed that up? A tremendous God of hope. And then in the spring after the bleak winter, another big burst of colors. And go up to Oregon in rhododendron season, right in the middle of it. It's absolutely unbelievable, isn't it? Anybody from Oregon? Wave your flag. You've never seen red clover till you've been in Oregon and seen red clover. Never seen red clover in your whole life till you've been there. See it bloom just like a solid carpet. Beautiful scarlet color just for miles and miles and acres and acres and acres. Unbelievable. It's chemistry and it's growth, but who did it? You know, who conceived and planned and devised this because he loved us? Who did this? How easily, you know, we look at it and say, my, isn't it beautiful? And we never even think about God. Never enters our mind. You know, the cows can probably say it's beautiful to eat. You know, we have more than the senses of dumb animals, don't we? We must operate on a different level than dumb animals. More than just perceiving with our eyes, it looks pretty. You know, the babies look at a toy, it's pretty, you know. We're beyond that stage, aren't we? To where we can make a qualitative judgment. We can meditate and perceive the deep things and make values, evaluations and things like this where we see who hath done this, you see? Why did he do it? For whom is it? Why has it been made? God wants us to see him in all these things. He is not nature, he's the creator of nature, but he wants to see more than nature. And more than the created, he wants us to see the creator. And so, as we come in touch with the physical and the mental and the spiritual, whatever we behold apart from the bite of sin, we see a knowledge of God. It's right there. And we're coming into a contact, a very different kind of contact. And this is unique about true Christian education that's lacking in all of the kinds of education. Unfortunately, it's not brought into Christian education too often anymore. And we need it desperately nowadays that our children might have the benefit of it. Now, here's the secret of wisdom and knowledge. This is how you become superior in intellect and rise above the ignorance that sin has caused among mankind. Here's the way it comes about. And Seventh-day Adventist Christians ought to be the most brilliant people in all the earth. We ought to be. And there's almost no excuse for any one of us not to be brilliant. The Hebrew people are brilliant because of certain things that God taught them. And I wonder if they still don't come into contact, maybe more than we do. They manifest a certain intelligence that is unique to them that sometimes we lack. And I don't think we ought to be lacking at all. We ought to be the head and not the tail, according to my understanding of the Bible. Now right here I want to camp a little while, this methodology. How do I learn? How does he teach? How is it made possible? Educators everywhere are trying to do something to remedy our poor system of teaching. And educators are the greatest critics we have today of poor teaching. They're the ones who call it poor, are they not? Page after page after page, book after book, magazine after magazine, newspaper article after newspaper article. They call it poor teaching. We're not accomplishing what we ought to do with human minds and school systems. And they're very critical, self-critical. And so, here's the method now, and here's the system. Page 14, near the bottom of the page. In this communion, coming into contact with God as I see the physical, the mental, and the spiritual, coming into contact with God, in this communion is found the highest education. Now, don't run away. You'll miss it, and you'll never come back, and you'll end up dumb. I don't like that. The Lord doesn't like that. He wants us brilliant. All of us. No matter how little education you have, he wants us brilliant. As I perceive, you see, God, the knowledge of God in the physical, the mental, and the spiritual, as I come into contact with the mighty intelligence, he calls in. This communion, this contact, in this communion is found the highest education. That contact must be made, not just in church, but in every classroom. Mathematics, physics, spelling, grammar, music, physical education, health, all the way through, you see. Any areas of physical, mental, and spiritual, the contact must be made. And this communion is the highest education. Now it's described briefly. Listen most carefully. It is God's own method of development. This is the way He causes development of the mind, as well as the body and the soul. And then it quotes a text from Job 22:21. Acquaint now thyself with Him is His message to mankind. Acquaint now thyself. Become very friendly, very intimate, very close. Learn to know Him. The method outlined in these words was the method followed in the education of the father of our race. That's the way He taught Adam. When the glory of sinless manhood, Adam stood in holy Eden, it was thus that God instructed him. How did He do it? Communion. I don't mean bread and wine. Those are symbols. I mean fellowship. Very, very close contact. A very close relationship. This is how it was accomplished. This is what He intended. It says, in order to understand what is comprehended in the... I must race on here to some more quotations about this. Just to elaborate on this communion. Some time ago, I spoke on this topic, a long while ago, in fact. You might have forgotten the quotations. In the book Education, page 84, it talks about His disciples. Page 84. To them above all others, He gave the advantage of His own companionship. Communion, you see, brings about this education. He gave the advantage of His own companionship. Through personal association, He impressed Himself upon these chosen co-laborers. Do you hear the verbs? Through personal association, He impressed Himself upon these chosen co-laborers. The life was manifested, says John the Beloved, and we have seen it and bear witness. Only by such communion, the communion of mind with mind and heart with heart, of the human with the divine, can be communicated that vitalizing energy, which is the work of true education to impart. How is this accomplished? Of mind with mind and heart with heart, human with the divine. What happens? A vitalizing energy is communicated, which He calls true education. An energy is communicated from Him, you see. Then she tells the results in the disciples' lives. In Desire of Ages, page 152, it was by His by personal contact and association that Jesus trained His disciples. Personal contact and association. Then it goes on and talks about His verbal teaching. Contact, association, He trained them. That's different. We do not indulge in that as much as we ought to indulge in it. Desire of Ages, page 250. He gave them the advantage of association with Himself. The advantage of associating with Himself. Never had the world's great men such a teacher. When the disciples came forth in the Savior's training, they were no longer ignorant and uncultured. They had become like Him in mind and character, and men took knowledge of them they'd been with Jesus. Advantage of what? Association with Himself. Communion brings contact. Fundamentals Education, page 47. It seemed but a simple thing for Jesus to connect these humble persons with Himself, but it was an event productive of tremendous results. Their words and their works were to revolutionize the world. Why? Because they connecting themselves with Him. The last one, Desire of Ages, page 250. It is not the highest work of education to communicate knowledge merely. Not the highest work to communicate knowledge merely. But to impart that vitalizing energy which is received through the contact of mind with mind and soul with soul. It is only life that can beget life. What a privilege then was theirs who for 3 years were in daily contact with that divine life from which flowed every life-giving impulse that has blessed the world. Are you with me? When you communicate knowledge, you're doing very little. You're totally dependent on memory, hoping it's a good memory, hoping that nothing happens to make them forget, all sorts of things. So reward memory. And we call IQ essentially memory in many ways. It's more than that, but we quite often limit to that by some of our testing procedures. She said, a higher education is vastly different than that. It's way, way above that. And it doesn't come about by a study of a book. She's not against studying books, is she? No. Not against experimentation laboratory? No. Not against any of these things. Not critical of those things either. But there's a dimension way beyond that, of mind with mind and heart with heart, where the human is brought into contact with the divine. Now, you have to have experienced this to find the benefit of it. When you hobnob, become very close to a very wise person, and you walk and talk with them day by day. When you stay after school with a brilliant professor and sit at his desk and watch him in the laboratory and just talk to him. When you spend hours with a great mind, you're learning. It isn't just things you learn and knowledge you learn, not just merely knowledge. It isn't that at all. You learn something from that mind that you can't find any other place. Something comes to you from person-to-person contact. Something's there. I have a book at home that talks about some of the great men of this world and how they became great. And you'd be amazed how many great men became great by coming into contact with one great person. That's all. I mean, spending some time, quite a bit of time, with one great person. There's been many a student who's languished in school until some professor took the time to take him or her under his wing and spent hours and hours and hours together. And suddenly that student became a student, just like that, and a good student, and perhaps a great student. We must share ourselves, not just head knowledge. What we are must be communicated. What he is must be transmitted and communicated, you see? Not just what he knows and what he does, but what he is. That must be communicated. We must know him. And all of that term means, to know him, is life eternal. It's not enough to know about him or what he's done or what he said. We must know him. That's vastly different. We must know more than knowledge in science. We must know the God of science. We must have more knowledge in music. We must know the God of music. Must know more than the human body and medicine. We must know the God who made these bodies, who keeps them functioning hour by hour and second by second, moment by moment. We must know him. Then something happens. Then we really learn. Now this is by making contact. So it's not enough, you know, to get interest in a class and get them listening to what you're saying. That's successful, by the way, nowadays. Very few classes are like that anymore. That's not enough. We must get to the place where there comes an intimate contact, a communication. That's more than just words and thoughts. That something else happens, mind with mind and heart with heart and soul with soul, God with man. This must take place. The human teacher who consciously kneels down before God in the morning or before class or in the prayer before class, and by faith takes hold of him, embracing him, so that I consciously have my mind stayed on God. So I consciously, I prepare the lesson, see the creator behind the things I'm discussing in the class. So I present him in class and not just a knowledge of things and laws. Then something happens. Then they see God. Then the mind becomes a different instrument. It begins to understand things it could never even perceive of or conceive of before. Because the great teacher is there to enlarge and strengthen and create. He is creative in his communications. We must bring him down who creates the capacity to understand, who teaches by revelation, by creation. Things are different. And we're transformed by perceiving him into the same likeness. Beholding as in a glass. Notice the text, 2 Corinthians 3:18. We're transformed by beholding him. So this is taking place in the daily education, not just in church. This must take place. God wants to do all this for us. These are fantastic things he wants to accomplish. Now I must race on. The time goes so quickly. At the bottom of the page it says, in order to understand what is comprehended in the work of education, we need to consider both the nature of man and the purpose of God in creating him. What is man like? And God's purpose of creating him. She goes on and describes what Adam was like originally and how God taught him by personal communication of mind with mind and heart with heart and so forth. But then when sin came along, man lacked this capacity darkness settled down in his mind, and he lacked what God wanted for him. Now, what was God's purpose for him? Page 15, about one-fourth of the way down. God created man in his own image. It's his purpose that the longer man lived, the more fully he should reveal this image. So man would go on, becoming more and more and more like God. She describes that. The more fully reflect the glory of the Creator. All his faculties were capable of development. Their capacity and vigor were continually to increase. So he's going to grow more and more and more like God. This was his purpose in education. It wasn't to make me wiser or to make me more intelligent. Those are byproducts. It's to make me more like him. Physically, mentally, and spiritually, right? Harmonious development, all three. Make me more like him. I more fully reflect his image. Had he remained loyal down the middle of the page to God, all this would have been his forever. Throughout eternal ages, he would have continued to gain new treasures of knowledge, discover fresh springs of happiness, to obtain clearer and yet clearer conceptions of the wisdom, the power, and the love of God. More and more fully would he have fulfilled the object of his creation. More and more fully have reflected the Creator's glory. So you just go on and on endlessly. Had sin not come along. Then she explains that in spite of sin, God by his love has made it possible for us to have the same goals and the same purpose. The bottom of page 15. Yet the race was not left without hope. By infinite love and mercy, the plan of salvation had been devised, and a life of probation was granted to restore in man the image of his Maker, to bring him back to the perfection in which he was created, to promote the development of body, mind, and soul, that the divine purpose in his creation might be realized. This was to be the work of redemption. This is the object of education, the great object of life. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world, lose his own soul? If you gain all the education in the world and still are lost, what have you profited? So true education brings this development of the likeness of God in man. Mental? So you grow in mind, in wisdom and intelligence and knowledge. You grow in physically more like him, and spiritually. And this will go on here and hereafter is the plan. Now the heart and soul of all of this is found in the next paragraph. And I wish we had days and days and days to study this, because I don't think that we even perceive slightly what it's all about. You'll just get a tiny little blink of light, just a little bit tonight. But this will not be discussed at great length later on, just briefly later on. But it talks about the basis of such education as this. Where do you start? How do you bring it about? How do you produce this? This contact, how does that come about? How do you produce that? What happens? Page 16. Love, the basis of education and of redemption, is the basis of true education. I'm sorry, the basis of creation and redemption is the basis of true education. That's a different thought. Love, the basis of creation and of redemption, is the basis of true education. The very foundation, she calls it. I would also like to call it the how of true education. How is it achieved? Love. This is the primary cornerstone of all education. It's right here you start to communicate, to bring this communion, you see. How do you get two people to commune? They must be drawn. He first loved us, so we're drawn to him, and we love him in return. We love him because he first loved us. There's a drawing power. If I be lifted up and show my love, I'll draw all men unto me. Love draws us to him. The contact produces the results of true education. Love is the basis. Now, I'd like to say this is also true in all education, in all schools. The child who senses no love doesn't learn, even though he's brilliant. He does not learn. The child who does sense love does learn, even though he's not brilliant. The same in the home. Is that not true? You see, you have a barricade against learning when there's no love. They don't listen anymore. They don't want to listen. There's no openness. There's no receptivity. And there's no sensitivity when there's no love. Love takes down all the barricades, all the hindrances, opens up the mind to reception. Can you think of a teacher you love very much in school? Way, way back, you know. Third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, academy, college, someplace, high school. Think the teacher loved you very much and took special attention of you? Did you learn very much there? Can you think of a teacher that you didn't like because you didn't think the teacher liked you? How much did you learn there? It's automatic, isn't it? The teacher you don't like, you don't learn very much. I had a history teacher one place. He was so suspicious. Didn't trust anybody. I thought I was trustworthy. I sat in his class. Suspicion everybody in a test. It's unbelievable, you know. You think we're all criminals. We used to move our desks. I sat way in the left-hand rear corner. And I had to move that chair snug up against two walls before he was pleased. Everybody else the same way, you know, just scattered out. Then we could take our test. I didn't want a good grade in his class. I didn't want to try. I suspicioned him as being a very poor teacher because he's so suspicious. I couldn't learn anything from him. He didn't have anything to teach me. I just was blind, you see. And I didn't want an A. Didn't even want a B. I think I got a B, but I didn't want one. You know, just didn't even care about report cards. Nothing from that person. Didn't mean anything. You know, if he gave me an A, it was meaningless because I didn't like him. He didn't like me. Love wasn't there, you see. I remember another teacher I had in college. Had a high squeaky voice like this. Little short fellow. The kind that would turn you off by appearances. Looked a little bit effeminate in his actions. And because of his position in the school, he didn't have the best reputation. You know, some positions make us disliked automatically. But he was a fantastic teacher, and you knew he loved you immediately. The first day, we all thought we had the poorest teacher. There are two classes taught by different individuals at the same time. And we thought we got the worst teacher of all until we listened to him. And he loved us. He really did. He was sweet and kind and patient and could teach, you know. The top three students in the two classes were all in his class. And he wasn't the head of the department. The other man was. He's supposed to have the wisdom about it. Top three students, same test, were in his class. We all dearly loved that man. Dearly loved him. And it was easy to learn in his class. And it was a tedious type of course. Not easy to get interested in, you know, too much. But he made it very pleasant by his disposition. He's a happy person and seemed to like us all very well. So we liked him and we learned. Is the same thing true of you? That's the way it is. Love is the basis of creation and redemption, and it's the basis of true education. And she goes on and describes the two parts of the law in Matthew 22 that Jesus gave to us. The one about love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul and strength and so forth. Now she elaborates on that one part of the law. Listen very carefully. To love him, the infinite, the omniscient one, with the whole strength and mind and heart, means the highest development of every power. To love him that way means the highest development of every power. It means that in the whole being, the body, the mind, as well as the soul, the image of God is to be restored. There's just something about that loving him supremely that does something for this feeble mind and body and soul. It means the highest development of every power. Just that alone. Just loving him that way. And to know him is to love him, is it not? And the Bible tells us about him over and over again. And there are witnesses that tell us about him. And we hear about him many, many places. And his love is revealed all over in all the things we perceive, the physical, the mental, the spiritual. And as you gain this, the highest development begins to take place all over the body, the mind, the soul. Now, the second is like unto the first, Jesus said. That's the next paragraph about loving your neighbor as yourself. The law of love calls for the devotion of body, mind, and soul to the service of God and our fellow men. What's the cause for that now? The law of God, law of love calls for that. The law of love is loving supremely and our neighbors ourselves. That calls for the devotion of body, mind, and soul to the service of God and our fellow men. This service we must share ourselves, not just head knowledge. What we are must be communicated. What he is must be transmitted and communicated, you see? Not just what he knows and what he does, but what he is. That must be communicated. We must know him. And all of that term means, to know him, is life eternal. It's not enough to know about him or what he's done or what he said. We must know him. That's vastly different. We must know more than knowledge in science. We must know the God of science. We must have more knowledge in music. We must know the God of music. We must know more than the human body in medicine. We must know the God who made these bodies, who keeps them functioning hour by hour and second by second, moment by moment. We must know him. Then something happens. Then we really learn. Now this is by making contact. So it's not enough, you know, to get interest in a class and get them listening to what you're saying. That's successful, by the way, nowadays. Very few classes are like that anymore. That's not enough. We must get to the place where there comes an intimate contact, a communication. That's more than just words and thoughts. That something else happens, mind with mind and heart with heart and soul with soul, God with man. This must take place. The human teacher who consciously kneels down before God in the morning, or before class, or in the prayer before class, and by faith takes hold of him, embracing him, so that I consciously have my mind stayed on God. So I consciously, I prepare the lesson, see the creator behind the things I'm discussing in the class. So I present him in class, and not just a knowledge of things and laws. Then something happens. Then they see God. Then the mind becomes a different instrument. It begins to understand things it could never even perceive of or conceive of before. Because the great teacher is there to enlarge and strengthen and create. He is creative in his communications. We must bring him down who creates the capacity to understand, who teaches by revelation, by creation. Things are different. And we're transformed by perceiving him into the same likeness. Beholding is in a glass. Notice the text, 2 Corinthians 3:18. We're transformed by beholding him. So this is taking place in the daily education, not just in church. This must take place. God wants to do all this for us. These are fantastic things he wants to accomplish. Now I must race on. The time goes so quickly. At the bottom of the page it says, in order to understand what is comprehended in the work of education, we need to consider both the nature of man and the purpose of God in creating him. What is man like? And God's purpose of creating him. She goes on and describes what Adam was like originally, and how God taught him by personal communication of mind with mind, and heart with heart, and so forth. But then when sin came along, man lacked this capacity. Darkness settled down in his mind, and he lacked what God wanted for him. Now, what was God's purpose for him? Page 15, about one-fourth of the way down. God created man in his own image. It's his purpose that the longer man lived, the more fully he should reveal this image. So man would go on and on, becoming more and more and more like God. She describes that. The more fully reflect the glory of the Creator. All his faculties were capable of development. Their capacity and vigor were continually to increase. So he's going to grow more and more and more like God. This was his purpose in education. It wasn't to make me wiser or to make me more intelligent. Those are byproducts. Is to make me more like him. Physically, mentally, and spiritually, right? Harmonious development, all three. Make me more like him. I more fully reflect his image. Had he remained loyal down the middle of the page to God, all this would have been his forever. Throughout eternal ages, he would have continued to gain new treasures of knowledge, discover fresh springs of happiness, to obtain clearer and yet clearer conceptions of the wisdom, the power, and the love of God. More and more fully would he have fulfilled the object of his creation. More and more fully have reflected the Creator's glory. So you just go on and on and on endlessly. Had sin not come along. Then she explains that in spite of sin, God by his love has made it possible for us to have the same goals and the same purpose. The bottom of page 15. Yet the race was not left without hope. By infinite love and mercy, the plan of salvation had been devised, and a life of probation was granted to restore in man the image of his Maker, to bring him back to the perfection in which he was created, to promote the development of body, mind, and soul, that the divine purpose in his creation might be realized. This was to be the work of redemption. This is the object of education, the great object of life. What shall profit a man if he gain the whole world, lose his own soul? If you gain all the education in the world and still are lost, What have you profited? So true education brings this development of the likeness of God in man. Mental, so you grow in mind, in wisdom and intelligence and knowledge. You grow in physically more like him, and spiritually. And this will go on and on here and hereafter is the plan. Now the heart and soul of all of this is found in the next paragraph. And I wish we had days and days and days to study this, because I don't think that we even perceive slightly what it's all about. You'll just get a tiny little blink of light, just a little bit tonight. But this will not be discussed at great length later on, just briefly later on. But it talks about the basis of such education as this. Where do you start? How do you bring it about? How do you produce this? This contact, how does that come about? How do you produce that? What happens? Page 16. Love, the basis of education and of redemption, is the basis of true education. The basis of creation and redemption is the basis of true education. That's a different thought. Love, the basis of creation and of redemption, is the basis of true education. The very foundation, she calls it. I would also like to call it the how of true education. How is it achieved? Love. This is the primary cornerstone of all education. It's right here you start to communicate, to bring this communion, you see. How do you get two people to commune? They must be drawn. He first loved us, so we're drawn to him, and we love him in return. We love him because he first loved us. There's a drawing power. If I be lifted up and show my love, I'll draw all men unto me. Love draws us to him. The contact produces the results of true education. Love is the basis. Now, I'd like to say this is also true in all education, in all schools. The child who senses no love doesn't learn, even though he's brilliant. He does not learn. The child who does sense love does learn, even though he's not brilliant. The same in the home. Is that not true? You see, you have a barricade against learning when there's no love. They don't listen anymore. They don't want to listen. There's no openness. There's no receptivity. And there's no sensitivity when there's no love. Love takes down all the barricades, all the hindrances, opens up the mind to reception. Can you think of a teacher you love very much in school? Way, way back, you know. Third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, academy, college, someplace, high school. Think of a teacher who loved you very much and took special attention of you? Did you learn very much there? Can you think of a teacher that you didn't like because you didn't think the teacher liked you? How much did you learn there? It's automatic, isn't it? The teacher you don't like, you don't learn very much. I had a history teacher one place. He was so suspicious. Didn't trust anybody. I thought I was trustworthy if I sat in his class. Suspicion everybody in a test. It's unbelievable, you know. You think we're all criminals. We used to move our desks. I sat way in the left-hand rear corner. And I had to move that chair snug up against two walls before he was pleased. Everybody else the same way, you know, just scatter it out. Then we could take our test. I didn't want a good grade in his class. I didn't want to try. I suspicioned him as being a very poor teacher because he's so suspicious. I couldn't learn anything from him. He didn't have anything to teach me. I just was blind, you see. And I didn't want an A. Didn't even want a B. I think I got a B, but I didn't want one. You know, just didn't even care about report cards. Nothing from that person. Didn't mean anything. You know, if he gave me an A, it was meaningless because I didn't like him. He didn't like me. Love wasn't there, you see. I remember another teacher I had in college. Had a high squeaky voice like this. Little short fellow. The kind that would turn you off by appearances. Looked a little bit effeminate in his actions. And because of his position in the school, he didn't have the best reputation. You know, some positions make us disliked automatically. But he was a fantastic teacher, and you knew he loved you immediately. The first day, we all thought we had the poorest teacher. There are two classes taught by different individuals, same time. And we thought we got the worst teacher of all until we listened to him. And he loved us. He really did. He was sweet and kind and patient and could teach, you know. The top three students in the two classes were all in his class. And he wasn't the head of the department. The other man was. He's supposed to have the wisdom about it. Top three students, same test, were in his class. We all dearly loved that man. Dearly loved him. And it was easy to learn in his class. And it was a tedious type of course. Not easy to get interested in, you know, too much. But he made it very pleasant by his disposition. He's a happy person. And seemed to like us all very well. So we liked him, and we learned. Is the same thing true of you? That's the way it is. Love is the basis of creation and redemption, and it's the basis of true education. And she goes on and describes the two parts of the law in Matthew 22 that Jesus gave to us. The one about love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul and strength and so forth. Now she elaborates on that one part of the law. Listen very carefully. To love him, the infinite, the omniscient one, with the whole strength and mind and heart, means the highest development of every power. To love him that way means the highest development of every power. It means that in the whole being, the body, the mind, as well as the soul, the image of God is to be restored. There's just something about that loving him supremely that does something for this feeble mind and body and soul. It means the highest development of every power. Just that alone. Just loving him that way. And to know him is to love him, is it not? And the Bible tells us about him over and over again. And there are witnesses that tell us about him. And we hear about him many, many places. And his love is revealed all over in all the things we perceive, the physical, the mental, the spiritual. And as you gain this, the highest development begins to take place all over, the body, the mind, the soul. Now the second is like unto the first, Jesus said. That's the next paragraph about loving your neighbors yourself. The law of love calls for the devotion of body, mind, and soul to the service of God and our fellow men. What's the call for that now? The law of God, law of love calls for that. The law of love is loving supremely and our neighbors ourselves. That calls for the devotion of body, mind, and soul to the service of God and our fellow men. This service, while making us a blessing to others, brings the greatest blessing to ourselves. You bless others, but it brings a greater blessing to you. How? Unselfishness underlies all true development. Unselfishness underlies all true development. Through unselfish service, we receive the highest culture of every faculty. That's the key sentence. Through unselfish service, we receive the highest culture of every faculty. More and more fully do we become partakers of the divine nature. We are fitted for heaven, for we receive heaven into our hearts. Go back and read Desire of Ages, page 20 and 21. I've referred to them here many times now. The law of giving is the law of life, earth, and heaven. The law of self-renouncing love is the law of life, earth, and heaven. Both pages, 20 and 21. Read them over and over again. This unselfish service, we receive the highest culture of every faculty. So now, two aspects. Supreme love for God. As I begin to love him and perceive his love for me and respond to it, the highest development of every power comes into play. I begin to grow more and more like him. True education at all levels takes place. As I manifest that love to you and to others in unselfish service, the highest culture of every faculty takes place. The serving produces education. Unselfish serving educates me. Now it's obvious that sitting in a classroom serving nobody distorts something, doesn't it? We're missing something. So to learn and not to serve, to love and not to manifest the love, is to lose the love, isn't it? In marriage, is that not true? To love and not manifest the love is to lose the love. It goes away. So we love others and don't serve them in unselfish service, it just goes away. In this unselfish service is the highest education, the culture of every faculty. Now, this is a very difficult thing for us to accept because we so seldom see it. Anywhere, any school, any time, we just don't see it. We We say, I don't understand how it works. We'll probably never understand how it works until we see someone doing it and see what happens to them. But go back and take a look at Jesus and his disciples. He not only taught them in a classroom out of doors day by day, but he sent them out two by two. First 12, then 70, then more. He trained them and he sent them out. Brought them back, trained them some more, sent them out. When he called them, he said, I'll make you fishers of men. You'll go out and serve mankind. When he reordained Peter, if you want to call it that, he said, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, serve them unselfishly. Bless mankind. He sent them out to go around the globe, did he not? All of them. Serving, 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 serving. What happened to them? Read their writings. And after 1900 years, they're still the classics of literature. We hardly perceive what they've written in the New Testament, the wisdom and knowledge found there. We hardly understand it at all. The greatest minds will study this throughout eternity. What they wrote in these few words. Will they not? We will be studying this a million years from now with the greatest minds that God can give mankind. And we still don't understand all they wrote. How they learn all this? Unselfish service. The angels of heaven, are they not all ministering spirits? The heavenly intelligences spend their time in serving us, you and me. Like Peter's ladder, sending and descending back and forth to heaven, you see, to bless us. Love is the basis of true education. This opens the mind. This brings us into communion, contact. It gets away from only knowledge. It gets into person to person, mind to mind, heart to heart, soul to soul. It opens up many avenues of communication, not just knowledge. And it gets beyond this transference of only intelligence, only wisdom, only knowledge, and not more than that. I must hasten to a close so we can go on to the next chapter next week. As you get down near the end of the chapter, it tells about all this included in this type of education and how it goes way beyond just the pursuit of a course. Page 18 at the top of the page. Now you understand why love is involved and why service is involved. Such an education provides more than mental discipline. It provides more than physical training. Two aspects now, right? More than mental discipline, more than physical training. That's two-thirds of harmonious education, right? True education. It provides more than that. It strengthens the character so that truth and uprightness are not sacrificed to selfish desire or worldly ambition. Now, this is highly important. When you emphasize only the mental, very often truth and uprightness are sacrificed to selfish desire. So it said this develops the character, strengthens it, so that those things are not sacrificed or worldly ambition. It fortifies the mind against evil. Instead of some master passion becoming a power to destroy, every motive and desire are brought into conformity to the great principles of right. As the perfection of his character is dwelt upon, the mind is renewed, and the soul is recreated in the image of God. What education can be higher than this? What can equal it in value? So she wants the character to be developed. That's what he wants to do. For when you gain this education of the mental and the physical with the right kind of character, then all that you've gained is controlled and directed properly and becomes a blessing to others and not a curse to yourself. The pride is not there, and the envy and worldly gain and all these other things. It's gone because the character is also trained and conformed according to his image. Then you know the thought down the bottom of the page. Higher than the highest human thought can reach is God's ideal for his children. Godliness, godlikeness is the goal to be reached. Before the student, there's open a path of continual progress. Please don't misuse that quotation as something you strive to attain, as some magnificent goal that you have to make or you're going to be lost. It doesn't say that. It says, before the student, there's open a path of continual progress. It's opportunity. It's privilege. It's not demands and exactions. Don't make it demands and exactions. Make it a privilege. An honor, an opportunity that God provides for us. She closed the chapter. As he awakens a desire to reach God's ideal, he presents an education that is as high as heaven, as broad as the universe, an education that cannot be completed in this life, but that will be continued in the life to come, an education that secures to the successful student his passport from the preparatory school of earth to the higher grade, the school above. That's a true graduation. All the graduations are sort of halfway. This is a true graduation. Would you please remember the precious things in this chapter that tell us something that's so good? The communion. We may walk and talk with God. Right now. This very second. He's trying to lead our minds to Him. That's why you come to church. He wants to speak. He wants to touch. He wants to communicate heart with heart and mind with mind and soul with soul. Humanity with divinity. He wants to sit down next to you. He says, let's talk. Let's think together. Let's talk it over. I'm your father, my little children. Listen to me. Is that what he says? Let's think about it. And just like that, he begins to tell us the glories of his plans, of his mind, of his person, of his kingdom, of his people. He begins to make changes. The changes do not come about by knowledge alone. The knowledge is a necessity. The changes come about like they do in nature, because God controls, God creates, God inspires, God blesses. He's the doer, the creator, that's what it means. He's the one who guides and leads and controls. When you sit next to Him and come into a very intimate relationship, something happens. And the basis of all this is love. You soon sense it's very comfortable to be with Him. A most special occasion. Sabbath was meant to be that special communion day. A very unique educational day in which we think on these things, as the Bible calls them. When God comes down and a very close fellowship takes place as we think about the Creator and all that He's done for His creatures. And as that communion takes place by love, the world will be amazed at you. Not your degree, and not the university you attended, or how many attended, or the hours you attended, or the papers you've written, or the books you've written. They'll be amazed that you've been with whom? Jesus. They will envy you. We don't want to be envied. We want Him to be envied. But they'll envy you. They'll want to have the same association. They'll want to know Him too. The opportunities that God has given to Seventh-day Adventists are way beyond what eye has seen nor ear heard, or even in the hearts of men. We haven't even imagined what God wants to do. For too long a time, we've been content with what earth offers. God waits to give us what heaven has to offer. May we count this of far more value than anything in all this world. This is His prayer and mine. Let us stand for prayer. Loving Father in heaven, we're thankful for just a little insight, a little glimpse, a little peek at the glorious opportunities that are ours because we're sons and daughters of God. Turn our eyes away from all these things that are so much lower, that might be contaminated with sin. Make us discontent with what the world has to offer. Teach us to look up, to behold the marvelous Creator and the things physical and mental and spiritual all about us. Give us the eye of faith, the ear of faith, that perceives the unseen, that sees the mighty hand of God behind all of this. Teach us to know Thee, whom to know is life eternal. Teach us to behold Thy love, to sense Thy love, perceive Thy love, that we might love Thee in return. And day by day, may we grow more and more into Thy divine image and likeness, that someday when He comes, we know we'll be like Him. We ask in Jesus' name.